This is CliffCentral.com.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be a fine, fine day. That is Euphonic featuring Zandra. And welcome to it. My name is Timisha Masha. And of course, you're chilling with me on the weekly mashup. But I don't roll alone. I roll with my side. No, can't say that. Well, the other person on the show.
Oh! It gets worse.
Yeah.
The other person on the show. I feel like my side chick would have been like,
no!
It would have been completely offensive.
No. Yeah,
but then I would have taken it.
Yeah,
I was like,
because
you're
somebody. Because a side chick
I'm
is a
somebody.
We're in a relationship.
Just the other person
right?
is like,
well, the
ugh.
Person, I'm, you know, my co-host. My
the
co-host.
Bystander.
My co-host. Nearly
I
messed that up.
You were going to be in the Sunday side.
You know, so I just make them up.
I feel
every
like
time.
You should practice a bit more. Damn it. It's been like going for 2 years.
I tried to
this is why you were left the first time.
Spontaneous.
I'm just saying.
The first time? You know how long ago that was?
I'm just saying.
Which first time? Because there have been many times.
I'm not talking
times.
About your marriages.
Oh, by my last co-host.
It's because of these terrible introductions. Like, I feel like
let's
I need
not.
To recruit.
How about let's not and then
and
say
so
we did. Okay. So how was your week?
Oh, it was lovely. It was very lovely.
What did you get up to?
Jeez, there's so much to get up to, but there's so many life lessons to learn every week. So I'm always learning a new life lesson.
Okay. What's the life lesson that you've learned this week?
That people need to stop putting God into their bad decisions.
Oh. Jean. Okay. Give us an example.
Okay. Just by the way, just an FYI, a disclaimer to all the people. Just so you know, I do not subscribe to any religious doctrines. Okay. Just so we put it out there.
What Candace
so
is trying to say is she doesn't go to church and she's
Hindus,
proud of it.
I respect Christians. I respect all religions. Okay. But I happen to call the universe God. Because I grew up like that.
Yes.
Anyway,
okay.
Now that that's out of the way.
Yeah, hey. It just took us everywhere.
I know. I'm like, I just need everyone to know. Okay. But anyway, so I'm coming back to stop putting God into your mess, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I have found, and it came from a particular conversation I had this week
okay.
with a gentleman who was...
A friend of yours. Just say it like it is.
Yes.
You and your friend were together
yes.
chatting, and
just
your friend just
chat.
Started having a pity party. As friends do, though.
Yeah. And look, I'm a good friend. I will let you wallow in self-pity.
Yeah.
Like, I am good. I will, you know, buy you food. I'll do whatever.
Oh,
like,
okay.
I'm a good friend. Okay, to a limit, guys, please. Don't, like, take advantage of my kindness.
I was about to buy you
There's
food.
Only so much budgeting
what
I can do for your
Wednesday?
Self-pity. Anyway, and he started just going on about like all these bad things that have happened in his life, right? So he's like, oh, I lost money and I did this and I lost my marriage and da da da. So I'm like, okay, I'm listening. And then this is where he threw me off a little. He's like, but you know what? It's God's will. And I was like, huh?
Like and God willed it that you lost all your money.
Yeah.
And you
like
lost
it was
your marriage.
It was actually a part of God's plan.
Oh, it was actually
and
God
I was like,
even planned.
I was like,
he
oh,
was
it's
like,
even destiny.
He's doing so well. Like, let's like, trip him up a bit.
Yeah. Happy, like let's
hey,
put
angels,
a Job
angels,
on him.
Angels, come over here. Come here. I want you to see something.
Yeah, let's see how we can trip him up.
Yeah, like that's what God goes around doing.
Yeah, he's just like you too happy. Let's just humble you a bit.
You're
yes.
Forget about the promises that I said that you're yours.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then,
okay.
So then I just brought it up and I said, look, you know, do you really think it's God to blame or is it you to blame?
Yeah.
And obviously they looked at me shocked because
like,
how dare you?
I?
How dare
you're
I?
You're supposed to be like agreeing with me right now.
Right? And I'm supposed to be. If I wasn't paying the bill, I would have completely agreed. But I mean, I was paying the bill.
Yeah.
I'm,
so
I'm saying my say.
Yeah. You have an opinion, damn it.
I'm going to have my opinion. And basically like, okay, so he went, all these things that he's blaming God for are things that he could have foreseen and he could have actually avoided if he had just taken time. So let's say the money lost, right? So he invested in a company that was sinking and everyone had left and he thought that I will resurrect it because I am MacGyver. And he threw all his money.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm the starring of my movie.
Yeah.
And he threw all this money into this thing. And well, obviously it went bankrupt as it was going to go. Because
as the ship was sinking.
Yes,
Titanic
yes.
is sinking. You're like,
he
how
was
much
Leonardo
for the
DiCaprio.
Boat? Yeah.
He was Leonardo DiCaprio. And
okay.
the business owner was like Kate Winslet. Like, I'm letting you go. Bye.
Yeah. Floating away on like a deck chair.
But thanks for your money. I'll survive and tell the story. Mm. And then, so that's the one thing, right? And I was like, that's not really God if you dread the... financials, you would have known that it was a sinking
business. You've done the due diligence.
Yeah, right. But anyway, so then I was like, okay, cool. Then he lost his marriage.
Oh, okay.
Which I'm sad, very sad.
How did that happen?
Bless him. He had an affair. So I was, right? So then I was like, look, God was not in your mess when you laid down next to someone else. Like, it wasn't like, were you praying at that time? Were you like, God, I'm calling you if you don't want this to happen.
Yeah. Like, what about lead us not into temptation? Like, that's one of the things that you ask God to do for you. At which point was he like, Lord, if please,
temptation has struck.
Yeah, temptation has struck. Just give me a sign. Or do, like, help me not do this.
Yeah, and it's not like, you know, there's certain situations where you're like, oh, Flip, you know, he fell into a situation. Like, Kevin Hart claims to have fallen into a situation.
Hey, but then, leave Kevin Hart alone.
Yeah, sorry, little man. So this was a long, ongoing thing, situation.
Oh, so this was this like, this wasn't out. Like, you know, oops.
No, this was not
that
an
one
oops.
Night. This was like, if they call and text and meet. And
no, this is a planned situation.
They have a relationship.
It's a planned situation. Yeah. This is not I'm just going to, you know, okay. You're my secretary and it's just like, oops.
Yeah.
So then that happened. So I was like, okay, but that's not a God situation. I was like, that is a you situation. Once again, like, you continuously deceived your wife and then she decided I'm leaving.
Yeah. She
and
found
now,
out.
And now you're saying that God is trying to teach you a lesson. What's that lesson?
Like, don't cheat on your wife.
Yeah.
That's a good one. Let's start there.
Like, be honest with yourself.
Like, God is like, okay, did you get it this time?
Yes, please. Well, sincerely, bless him. I do hope you learned this lesson.
Okay. That's really interesting. I think sometimes we think that we do these things, right? And we don't want to take the blame.
Oh, no.
So it is either like, but, you know, have you met my wife?
Oh, 100.
She was like, she wasn't even giving me sex or whatever.
Yeah.
So that's why I had an affair.
A marriage is between two people. Yeah. You don't know you what know, goes on.
You know. But we come up with these excuses for doing things that are going to trip us up.
Oh, yeah.
And then when we're tripped up, then we blame God because we're like, if God loved me, then he would have stopped me. But we forget one thing. God gave us a choice. We can either, you know, the Bible does say you can either choose life or you can choose death. And then God says, choose life.
Please do it.
Like there's a clue. And then we choose all this other stuff. And then we just get banged up and then we blame anybody.
Yeah.
Somebody.
Higher power, friend, cousin.
Those are my parents. They raised me wrong.
Yeah.
You know, if they weren't so happy in their marriage, I would have known that marriage is hard.
Like, I just saw this fairy tale. Damn it.
You know, whatever they do, my father left me when I was 5. So obviously I was going to do that. Like, okay.
Yeah. But there's one thing I actually want us to lead into, and that is, I think it ties in, accountability ties into what your journey is right now, right?
Oh,
which
man.
Is the weight loss journey. Oh. And you have undertaken this incredible and extremely hard.
Yeah.
Because I do not envy you one bit, because I go through these bouts of dieting, then not dieting.
Look, I did it to myself. I was in pretty good shape at some point.
You were like top billing man of the year.
Yeah.
And then
yeah,
I was just like, six pack.
I was like your friend. God, if it's a sign that I shouldn't eat this bread with the pasta and have a beer, say something. Like, make it not taste so good.
Say something. I'm giving up on you.
Yes.
I'm giving up.
And I did everything. I sabotaged myself terribly.
Yeah.
I take full accountability. I enjoyed the journey.
Yeah.
Like, getting fat is one of the most fun things you can do. Honestly. Like, eating what you want. Like, going to a restaurant and not going, hi, sorry, is this gluten-free, dairy-free, sugar-free? You know, when you're
salt
just like,
free,
flavor just
free.
Give me what I want and give me two of them, you know, and a beer to wash it down.
Yeah.
And it's only 9 a.m. That's your breakfast.
Can I ask you something? So I've never, like, gone overweight, right? So my
Can
weight
you?
Fluctuates. No, I've been like a little chubby.
Have you been chubby?
Like on my face, I feel.
On your face.
On my
That's
face.
Not chubby.
Okay, wait. Yeah. Okay. Leave me and my skinny journey alone.
Okay, cool. Yeah.
But is there a point where you like realize, when did you realize that, okay, I'm really getting out of control?
You know what the problem is? As you're getting out of control, you realize. And then because you feel so bad about yourself, and I think that this is a journey that I'd like to help people with, because it's not just about weight loss or weight gain. It's about everything else that we do in life. Sometimes we start on this trajectory of self-loathing and self-hate, or we're in a lot of pain. Everything starts out with not being able to manage your pain.
100%.
So what happens is we start either self-medicating our pain or hurting ourselves more.
Mm-hmm.
So you realize I've put on a couple of pounds and I'm not living my best life.
Yeah.
But what happens is you get into a cycle of self-loathing. So you're like, I hate myself and I feel so low. What am I going to do? Let's eat some more. Mm-hmm. Exactly, right? This will make me feel better. Or let me go out drinking. Because we all gain weight in different ways, right? 100%. You might think like, I'm not eating, but you know.
Oh yeah, but I'm drinking all the time.
I'm drinking all the time. That's going to mess you up.
Mm.
And then you get to a point where I suppose you think you've hit rock bottom,
mm-hmm.
where you like just hit the bottom and then you don't realize
that
there's another
bottom?
Level. You just keep going.
Sorry.
I think my level was...
So you thought you hit rock bottom, then you sank.
There was a time where I was like, yeah, this is as far as I want to go. This is like, phew, this is it. I'm on my way up.
And then the elevator just went...
Like there was a ledge. It's like, no, this is a ledge.
Sorry. Okay, go on. So what was that
deeper,
ledge?
Right?
What was
I think the ledge was when my daughter was born. I was like, okay, this is like far enough now. This is like, you know, it's good.
Yeah.
I was there. I supported. I ate with you.
Oh, so we gained weight together.
We gained weight together. Now I'm coming back. And now that wasn't it. Like, I just kept going on my own now.
Okay.
You
yes.
know. And where I got to a point was like, something's got to change. I took a walk. I tried to just walk 3Ks. Just 3Ks.
Yeah.
Just as an exercise.
Yeah.
My first K, I was so tired and out of breath. And it wasn't even like a major uphill. It was just like my first K of walking. Yeah. This was like December sometime.
Jeez.
2016. I was like, that's it.
Oh, really?
From today onwards, this is gonna change.
Yeah.
And funny enough, when you say that,
the intention,
I believe God puts everything in your life to help you succeed.
Mm.
He will bring around the right people. He will take you and put you in the right places. You will have everything that you need. You just have to receive and grab the opportunities.
Yeah. Is it a holistic, because I'd assume that weight gain, right? Like you said, it comes from self-loathing and being out of control with your own life. And the only thing you can control is what you're really putting into your mouth.
That's right.
So when you started this journey, it had to be a holistic thing. You had to fix the core.
I had to start with me spiritually.
Yeah.
I had to be at a place where spiritually I was more about my spirit than I was about my flesh.
Mm.
Because I'll put it this way, our bodies and us as human beings, what we want in our flesh is not always good for us.
Yeah,
like we all love sugar, right?
Oh,
it tastes good.
Yeah.
Once you get hooked on the taste of alcohol, on cigarettes, you want that. And your body craves for that stuff. It's like drugs. I mean, when you're addicted to drugs, you're no longer in control. It's your body telling you, hey,
we need this.
Call the dealer, man. Mm. You're like, not today, please. I'm about to go to an important meeting. It's like, yo, call the dealer right now or else.
Yeah.
And what you got to do is get to a point where you are operating on the spiritual level and not on a flesh level. So you know that you have dominion over your flesh. You have control over yourself. And you say, even though it hurts. And that's why getting out of any addiction in the beginning is so painful. The first couple of weeks of exercising are going to hurt. The first couple of weeks of dieting are going to hurt. The first couple of weeks of rehab are going to hurt. Because those first couple of weeks, months sometimes, is when your body is screaming at you, saying, yo, I want this and I want that.
Mm.
Right? So if you're trying to change your life in any way, don't be afraid. That initially is going to be so difficult.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to even have friends who are like, ah, man, come on.
Ah, let's go drink.
Let's go have a, it's just a beer.
Yeah.
Like, let's go to a braai at least. Mm. And then you get there and they're like, ah, fooled ya, we're having drinks as well.
Yeah.
You know, and you're going to have to get out of the places and the people that are still there.
Jeez. And I think that applies to every aspect of our lives, right? It's not just people who are facing physical challenges, but even people who are trying to accomplish their dreams and make big things happen. I think all these obstacles will come into your path.
Yeah, you have to do new things. So what I realize is initially, don't go to the same places. Don't go to those brides.
Don't hang around with the same people.
Don't hang around with the same people who eat the things that you're trying to avoid. Heck, if you got to be at home all the time where you can control what you're eating, do that. And then when you're ready, start going out slowly. And you know what? Maybe change your environment and change your friends.
Oh, I love it. Well, I feel like a lot of the time it's just you do have to change your external environment.
Yeah.
You know, even when you're trying to accomplish something, because certain people have not accomplished that level of success that you're aiming for, they can't see where you're going. So you need to be around mentors and you need to surround yourself with people who have been there and learn from them, read books, you know, that kind of thing.
That's right. And I think that the important thing is, even while you're on it, like today I was running, right? And I was doing my 7K and I was like, ah, this is so painful.
Yeah.
And I decided right there and then, you know what? My reality is actually an illusion. My real reality is what the thought I have in my 100%. Head of seeing myself running up this hill with strength, with power.
Oh, yeah.
And even though it's not happening now, I'm manifesting it. So if I keep doing this, and even though my flesh is saying, you got to stop, I need a break, if I push through this and I keep pushing through this, it's only a matter of time when what I'm manifesting, the vision will be the truth.
Oh,
that's what it is with everything.
I love it.
And on that note,
yes, a visionary.
We got a visionary in the studio. Yes. Mr. Sean Barber. How
Hello.
You doing, Sean?
I'm good. How you doing?
Okay, just in case you don't know who Sean Barber is, you know there's that new amazing restaurant in Bryanston?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the one
the
new
four
restaurant.
Level.
But there's other restaurants called Rockets.
Mm-hmm, but this is like the monster.
This is like the monster, right?
Yeah.
It's like all the Joburg cool people, all the cool kids.
Oh, yeah.
Are there,
you are bound to bump into everyone that's cool. That
I went there for your birthday.
Oh, yeah. Because I got taste, man.
Yeah,
I got,
you got
taste.
I was like impressed. And you know what? It's quite fair, but because it's so full, like, I'm a celebrity, okay? And I was like,
I'm to Misha
can
Marsha,
I have a taste? And they were like, listen, it's Saturday night. You can see for yourself, dude. It's full. So, you know, very
we
well
say
done.
That to you.
No, no, they didn't say, like, we know you're safe. They were like, but you know what? It is full. We're going to get you the best table that we can get. They were
no,
very
he demanded,
fair. I tried.
Sean, he demanded the best table.
I tried
in, the
in a nice way, in a charming way. I was like, hey, man, you know.
But wait, it's hard to get a bad table because the whole place was so beautiful.
It was cold. It was winter.
Like, oh, you wanted to be inside?
I wanted to be inside.
Oh, okay. Okay, I get it.
But great service, great food.
Thank
you.
Oh, yeah.
Congratulations to you, Sean.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah, Sean, I mean, that is like a four story, just so that people know. It is four stories, the rooftop, and then there's the two levels, there's the bar.
Mm. So you got the rooftop level, which we call the Elix Bar. Then you've got the bar/tapas lounge, which we've called Lolita's.
Okay.
Then we've got the restaurant level. And then underneath we've got we call it a members lounge, but it's not really a members lounge, it's more like a co-workspace.
Okay.
Yeah, it's more aptly described as a membership area that you can come if you pay a monthly subscription, you can come and work there during the day.
Oh, that's
so
cool.
That's on that bottom level, yeah.
Dope.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, it's cool.
But you started out with the one restaurant. Which was your first one?
That was Ravonia 2007.
Oh,
okay.
Wow.
The one, it's just up the road from Cliff Central, right?
We're in Vessels, one. It's one right up, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Brought back memories driving it.
And what? Do you still have that restaurant here?
No.
You moved totally?
Yeah.
We moved on.
So you've packed it all up
but
and put it into Bryanston.
We kept that. We went in Ravonia Boulevard. We did 9 years.
Oh, jeez.
So we actually, in September 2016, we donated that restaurant to Rhino Salvation. So we we've got another brand called Fuel. And we took that brand, put it in the Ravonia shop and called it Fuel for Runners, and all of our profits went to honorary rangers for 6 months before we closed.
Whoa.
Dope, man.
That is incredible. Yeah.
So you're a guy from Durban, Sean. What made you decide that you were going to go into this business of being a restaurateur?
For my sins, I was a CA by trade.
Oh.
Yeah, but a bad one.
Yeah, well, bad as KPMG one. Were you on that level?
Maybe not as clever as them, but maybe more honest. I don't know.
Yeah, that's what made you bad. You know, you were honest. Yeah.
I was too honest. Yeah.
All right. And here you are. You studied. You're a CA. Obviously, it's a very tough degree. My sister just became a CA, and it takes a while. You have to be smart.
That was 8 years.
And everyone is like, this is the path to go. I mean, this is the promised profession, right?
My dad said, yeah.
And then you decide, no, stuff this.
I took the furthest thing away from being a CA I could find, which is restaurants. That's how much I hated being a CA.
Oh. Okay. So did you go into restaurants because you hated being a CA or because you loved restaurants?
No.
Kind of both.
A bit of both.
A little bit.
No, I went into restaurants because I had a feeling, I had a good hunch that I could get it done.
Okay.
You know, and if we're nothing, we're instinctual creatures, you know.
What was it about your instincts that you thought you could do differently with restaurants?
You know, restauranteering is sensory. You got to touch base on all the senses, and I was very in tune with that throughout my whole life. Whatever I did in school, if we put on an event, if I threw a party, we touched base on all of those. You know, I had all of those areas covered, and I thought if I could bring that into restauranteering, you know, taste, touch, sight, sound, all of them. Then I could make it happen. So I moved back from London and gave it a go.
Okay. And what was your first one? Did you open immediately a first restaurant, or did you just start working for someone
else?
No,
I just jumped out the plane and hoped that parachute would open by the time I hit the ground.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
oh,
right, I bounced. Like it didn't open. I bounced. Oh. It opened. Yeah. It opened on the second free fall, I suppose.
Okay. What was your first restaurant?
That was Rockets in Rivonia. So it did work. Oh. Yeah, it did work. But the initial months were quite tough.
Yeah.
It was an automated car garage over there, corner of 12th and Rivonia Boulevard.
When you opened, it was a very strange spot. I mean, Rivonia wasn't as, I suppose, sophisticated as it kind of started to become later on.
Yeah. But it was only, especially it was that part, only landlord, right? That would give me a gap.
Yeah.
He was the only one, yeah.
And it seemed like you were, at some point, you were thriving in that particular space, as that's where we knew Rockets was. And people came from far and wide to come to this place. And I remember back in the day, like you said, there were all these other places that were a little bit dodgy. And then the Grand opens right there, which is good and maybe not so good as well, right?
You know, people would say, is it good being next to the Grand? And you're like, oh, yes and no, I suppose. Yeah. When people want to go to the Grand, they want to go to the Grand.
Yeah, they're not interested.
They don't stop off at you first.
No.
But it's a good way to like say, how do you get there? Where is this place? Well, you know, just by the Grand, just behind
that. You can ask someone that when they're not next to their wives.
Yeah.
You can say, do you know where the Grand is? And they go, no. Not a clue.
What do they
what
do
is
there?
The Grand?
But when you started Rockets, what was the core principle? Like, what was the core messaging that you wanted your restaurant to stand for?
Look, I've always been interested in the fusion food type aspect of cuisine. I get bored if I have to stay to one type of national cuisine, like Italian or Portuguese or whatever. And I like the fusion food aspect. I don't like any frozen food. We like to prepare fresh every day, and we've kept that basis going through all of our shops, no matter if it's a Rockets Express or if it's a Big Rockets. You know, we make sure everything we do is fresh on that day, cut to order, made to order. So in terms of the food aspect, I wanted to do that, and then I wanted to just put it in an environment where people feel relaxed and the service is dynamite. You know, have we got it right all the time? No, of course not. I mean,
no one does.
Find a restaurant here that says he's got that right all the time, and you'll I'll show you someone who's lying. But it's just an unrelenting pressure on that standard. I mean, we are as fanatical about the meal that comes out in the next 5 minutes right now than I was in 2007, 5th of December.
What I like to know is, like, when you landed on that plane from London and you decided, I want to open a restaurant, and then getting to that point where it's actually open, you know, I suppose being a CA or former CA helped because you knew how to work the numbers. And all people who are going to fund your restaurant or help you, if you're going to go and get investors, they need to know the numbers. How important was that in getting you to where you were? Obviously it's a combination, but what combination was it of the numbers and the touch, the sensory stuff, the feel, the taste, everything else?
Look, I think you can, if you can't do the numbers yourself, you can get someone to do the numbers.
Okay.
You know, but look, restauranteering is, it's half inspiration, which is the creativity, and it's half perspiration, which is the numbers. And by numbers, I mean counting. So we count everything every day. You got to stick to your GPs, your cost of sale percentages. You got to watch that. If you're not watching that, you will close. Simple as that. And that's the unglamorous part of restauranteering. You know what I mean?
I mean, you went into one of the toughest businesses.
Jeez.
Because not only do you have in your business that's going to affect your profit, the fact that what you sell is stuff that's perishable.
Well, you've got highly desirable, perishable, movable goods. That's a trifecta in terms of vulnerability when it comes to stock, you know, and including booze.
Exactly. I was going to go to that as well.
Yeah.
I mean, most restaurants, where they fall is the fact that actually, you know, the booze, if you don't like really control that, you're going down, baby.
Yeah, you're going down. So look, I mean, we count everything every day. We probably spend 3 or 4 man hours per employee every day counting something. We count everything from teaspoons to fillet steaks. You can't. You have to count. If you don't, you get, even if it's an initial, it might be a little bit that you're losing. It snowballs. You know what I mean? The hardest part of controls, which I always tell my guys, it's not inventing or developing the control. It's doing it to infinity. You got to do that every day.
Even when it gets boring.
Yeah, even when you
and
think
I'm sure
you got
it does.
It. And it does. There's nothing more boring than counting, believe me, and entering your variances and investigating your variances. It's the worst part of our job. But that is what makes you money. You know what? You can give me a 500,000 Rand restaurant or give me a 5 million Rand restaurant. If you don't know what you're doing on the 5 mil restaurants, you'll make less money than the 500,000 Rand restaurant.
Oh, geez.
Wow.
Just because you turn more, you know what I mean? Doesn't mean you make more.
Oh,
it means
yeah.
you can lose more. Restauranteering is about controls. It is.
But you sound very hands-on. Is that a conscious effort that you make to constantly be on top of everything?
For sure. Have to be. They have to be. Like when someone says to me, oh, I want to open my own restaurant. And I say, okay, why do you want to open your own restaurant? And yeah. There we go. If they say to me, oh, I love to cook, I'm like, oh, yeah. No.
Not really a good reason.
I'm a great cook.
And cook at home,
damn it. Don't say that. The second one is, oh, I love people. You need both of those. You need to love food, you need to love people, but that's not what's going to make your restaurant. Yeah. Am I hands-on all the time? Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
But I've got an incredible team that are also hands-on. We do it together. It's a team effort. I don't go waltzing, and I leave with them as much as I can.
Yeah.
You know, we're a family there. In all my stores, we're families.
But did you make sure that in the hiring process you hired people who shared your same value and vision?
Yeah, like, I mean, we've got over 300 people that work for us in and amongst our restaurants. So you try to, and you try to think you get good at in the interview process and in the hiring process, but you make mistakes there. It's not always easy.
Yeah.
It's not always easy. I make mistakes all the time.
I mean, I'm sure a couple would fall through the cracks, right? Because, I mean, most of us are very good interviewees. And then when you get to the job, it's like, I said all these great things.
Especially people in hospitality. They're very, 100%. They're very good interviewees because they're used to conversing with people. So they'll know what to say to you as their potential boss. So you as their potential boss need to be able to see through that. Maybe one out of two times I get it right.
But I think for me, what's important is, okay, we've heard the story of who you are and what you do. But the big story is the man behind.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the restaurant. Sean Barber, what is your ultimate inspiration? What is it that makes you tick as a man?
That makes me tick as a man?
Mm-hmm.
It's simple. It's my family. Eh?
Yeah.
Straight. That's why I do what I do. No. My wife and my three kids.
Actually, you know what?
And my family also extends to the people I work with.
Yeah.
But, primarily my family.
How do you make those two work so well? Because, you know, obviously you're a real family man, but you're in a very tough business.
Oh, in every sense.
That for a lot of people takes them away from their family. Mm. How do you marry those two, man?
Well, look, it's very easy for family and restauranteering to be mutually exclusive.
Mm.
You know, but just because of the hours, you know, and Kenz, you said, am I hands-on? Yeah, I am hands-on. So that makes it even harder. So when do you find time for your kids and when do you find time for your wife, especially if you want to be at your shop or one of your shops all the time? You know, and to a large extent you need to be at your shops all the time, but you also have a wife and kids that need to see you. So I think I found the balance about 7 or 8 years ago when but certain things had to give. You know, so the first thing that gave was alcohol. I don't drink. I don't drink at work. On a very special occasion, I might have one drink with a customer. I'm not going to turn to salt if I do.
Yes.
But
you never know.
You never know.
Lot's wife had no idea when she turned around. They told her. They warned her. Okay.
But maybe she was a drinker. You never know. But we've got a very strong no drinking policy at work.
Okay.
We have no staff drinks, no after work drinks. That helps my wife. She knows I'm 100% in control. There's no fraternizing with clients.
Important.
Yeah, you don't. There's no second venue when we close and cash up and go home. We go home. You know, all of us, we go home to our families.
I like that, man. You're incredibly disciplined in what you do, but that's because you seem to have a higher purpose. That's your family, right?
Yeah.
And how important is that in you know any business at all, but especially in what you do?
Yeah, I think a higher purpose is incredibly important, especially when you're in a pressurized situation. You know what I mean? So if you and you guys alluded to it earlier, that the more pressure I think someone is exposed to, the easier it is for the syntax. You know what I mean? The easier it is to buckle, whether you're buckling to food or cigarettes or alcohol or
whatever your vice.
Yeah. Exactly. So if you have a higher purpose, it makes your metal that much stronger. And I think as restaurateurs, you need that. You need a good support base. If I didn't have anyone to go home to, I don't know if I would be as disciplined as I am.
And is that what keeps you grounded?
For sure, 100%.
Yeah.
My family.
Jeez.
What's the legacy you want to leave behind? Why do you think God gave you this opportunity to open these restaurants that flourish, that do so well? It can't just be, obviously, for the lifestyle and everything else. There must be a higher purpose, right?
I mean, look, the benefit about restauranteering and what we do, we are... especially because we've opened quite a few shops, we're able to employ a lot of people. So, you know, we employ over 300 people. That means we're supporting over 1,200 if you go in a family of four kind of thing. So, I mean,
you're supporting households.
That's households, yeah. And what's also nice is that with all of the people that work for us, we upskill them as much as possible. So even if we start them as a scholar. They'll be in with, we'll give them opportunity to grow within the kitchen. You know what I mean? So
oh,
we'll take them from scullery to pizza section to salad section to grill. Just they just need to show a willingness and an aptitude to learn. You know, so the legacy that we have, it is there's a social benefit to it that we can uplift people. You know, that is nice. And I think if, especially in this country, if we all have that attitude, we can, doesn't matter if you do a little bit of good or a lot of bit of good, if we all synergize in terms of that social benefit aspect to what we do, a lot of good can be created. So there is that. I mean, on a personal front, I think, I mean, just providing for my family and the people close to me that I work with, providing for their families. You know, people said, do you love restaurants? I love restaurants. I adore restaurants.
Yeah.
Would I want my kids to be in restaurants? Hell no.
Because you know.
Because I know. It's hard. I mean, we do 100-hour weeks.
Yeah.
I've been doing 100-hour weeks for 10 years.
And how do you stay in shape, man? You're doing so many hours and whatnot.
It's a very flattering t-shirt.
I must get one.
We must all just like.
But look, I mean, you're a son of the soil. You know, you're talking about this country. You're not like you are. I was gonna say you're not even from Joburg, but you're from Durban.
Durbs. Yeah.
All right, you're a Durban boy.
I'm a Durban boy.
And you came out to the city of gold, or was it you just love this place?
I went to Cape Town first. I went to Cape Town for 5 years, and then I moved to Joburg, and I fell in love with Joburg.
Oh really?
What's your favorite
in Cape Town?
Joburg is my favorite city.
Really?
I love Joburg
by
as well,
far. Yeah. Not even a question.
It's got a great vibe, doesn't it?
You can. I've lived in New York, London, Chicago. I've lived in a lot of places.
Yeah.
Joburg, hands down.
Yeah.
And why? Why would you say that is?
It's just, you know what? It sounds cliche, but the people in Joburg are amazing.
Mm.
We don't have anything but people. Yeah.
Mm.
We've got mind dumps and people.
Yeah.
Oh wow. Well, yeah.
We don't have the ocean. We don't have a mountain. We've just got us.
Yeah. We got to. So, we make it work.
And we make it work. And it's hard. And it's fast. I mean, I think it's the hardest, fastest city there is.
Yeah.
And to open a restaurant in a city like that's awesome.
Yeah.
Actually, you know, here's the one thing. I mean, you succeeded in Rivonia, but now you're super mega successful in Bryanston. How do you plan to just sustain that? Because the people in Joburg will go to your restaurant for 6 months, love it, and then suddenly go to another place.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's always a risk. Yeah. Restauranteering is three steps. You got to build it, you got to open it, you got to maintain it. And the maintaining is where your skill set comes in. You need to reinvent yourself every 16 to 20 months. You need to keep it fresh in people's minds, whether it's a menu change, whether it's a decor change, personnel change. Whatever you do, you got to keep it current. As soon as you're not current, there's always going to be that next guy opening around the corner.
Oh, 100%.
You know, and that's going to try and copy you. We've had that already. We've been open 4 months ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah. No one's mentioned.
But I can see why. Like, I mean, everyone wants to copy a successful winning formula, right?
Yeah.
So if it looks like it's working for someone else, you just want to replicate the success. You don't want to put in all the work of thinking of a new idea.
Yeah, but well, they said to us, you're never going to fill four floors. You're never going to do it when you're building. Yeah, you're never going to do it. And then we did it. And now they say, well, you're never going to do it for 5 years.
So
bring it on.
Yeah.
And you love it. Do you
love
it when people do it?
Challenge accepted.
And how do you define success in the business front and on the personal front?
On both sides.
Mm.
I think success on a professional front would be to a certain extent debt free.
Mm-hmm.
Although debt can be your friend, you know, and used at times. I think if you don't have to use debt, but you choose to, that's still a means of success. Mm-hmm. If you have to use debt with no other option, I think you are not really successful yet. So I think once you have a war chest of cash and you're able to expand in terms of whatever business proposition you get given or whatever opportunity you want to take hands on, if you can self-finance something like that, then I think you have a measure of success that you can look back and go, yeah, I think I've achieved what I needed to achieve.
Are you yourself self-financed with the new establishment?
With the new one, unfortunately not.
Okay.
The new one was just a 30 million rand restaurant. So I don't.
Wow.
That's and it looks it. Can we just be fair?
That's a lot of burgers.
Yeah. you gotta flip a lot of burgers.
I'm not there yet.
But I love what you just said now, like especially because it's coming from someone who is in a tough business, but you're also formerly a CA, because I think a lot of young people, they talk about this big dream that one day I'll just be totally out of debt and I'll never have debt and I never use debt. My sister likes to use it. You know, she's a banker. And I think to myself, but surely there is a balance between having some debt and also not having some debt. That you always need a little bit of debt anyway.
Yeah, I mean,
why not get someone else to finance your dreams?
Exactly. It just depends on the cost of your debt. Mm. You know, the risk associated with your debt. You know, if you've got a palate for both of those, then why not use someone else's money?
And the ability to manage the debt
and
as
manage
well.
The debt,
because
sure.
At the end of the day, yes, you asked for that money, right?
Yeah.
Because here's where we go wrong as
business
people.
Rather debt than give away equity. Remember that.
Oh, rather debt than give away equity.
Yeah.
That's a nugget of wisdom.
Come on, keep going. Keep going with that one. Why would you say that?
Yeah. Debt is fine. Debt is not going to ever tell you how to pay run your business.
Okay.
Pay your debt back, your debt's gone. Mm. You know what I mean? Bringing a partner on, things get a whole lot more complicated. Share ownership is way more complicated than debt. Mm. A lot more. You know, if partners were good, God would have one. Remember that.
British. I'm gonna put that on Insta. No, I like what you're saying, because I was just about to, with my next business, go and get a whole bunch of people to come into it and like share the equity. And what you just said, because that was a debate I was having in my mind. Do you just go and get some debt, or do you just say, look, guys, everybody put some money in and let's make this thing work?
I mean, if you can leverage off a skill set from a partner, they're gonna launch your business further than you can yourself and at a much higher pace, then for sure get that partner in there. But if you're in an industry where, I'm not saying we know all there is to know, but we've been doing it going on 11 years now.
Yeah.
You know, we've opened 9 stores. I never want to say we know all there is, because I would never ever be that arrogant. But in terms of restauranteering, we have quite a vast knowledge about it. So to bring on a partner in the restaurant business, when you have that knowledge,
too many opinions,
and yeah, too many chiefs, not enough Indians. But if it's a new business, for instance, that I don't know enough about, and I take on a strategic partner that knows more than me, for sure.
Yeah, here's the thing, right? Because you spoke about you've got 9 shops.
Yeah.
Where are the other restaurants?
We sold Rivonia. So we opened 9, we have 8. We've got the 4 Rockets Expresses, which is a brand that we started on the side. There's another brand I have called Fuel. And then there's the 2 shops in Parkhurst and now the big one in Bryanston.
All right, dope.
Yeah.
The Parkhurst one is also amazing. I mean, Bryanston is like the kingpin, but like,
Parkhurst has been good to us.
Yeah.
I think we honed our skills in Rivonia.
Yeah.
That's what we did.
Yeah.
You know, and we realized how to, it's guerrilla warfare in Rivonia. That's a destination shop, you know, and you need, if you can make 9 years in Rivonia, you can make 9 years. So we took that destination shop and we put it in a half footpath, you know, area with a lot of competition. We brought our standards there and what we do there, and we flourished.
Yeah. How did you keep that first shop, the Rivonia one, going when you say it is a destination area? Because you go there on purpose. You never went to Rocket in Rivonia like I was just passing
by. I'm just driving by. No. I just look over there. There's Rocket in Rivonia. No.
I think I'm hungry. I'm going to pop in.
I'm going to walk down the road to Rocket in Rivonia. Yeah. How do you make a restaurant last in a destination location? That's the hardest thing about restauranteering. The benefit about being a destination location is that you're going to have low rent. Remember that. You've got a high footfall area, or with, you know, in a very high density residential / corporate area, you're going to have high rent, but you're going to have high patronage. You know, if you're going to be in a destination type spot, you know you're going to have low rent. So make sure that you can have enough people frequenting your shop to cover that low rent. It's much easier to cover low rent.
Okay, but did you do a lot of marketing? Did you go out there on social media?
Look, I mean, in 2007 when we started, I feel like a dinosaur saying this, but there was no social media.
Yeah.
Or definitely not as prolific as it is now.
Mm.
So it's, you know, we worked on the 1 in 10 ratio, that if someone has a good experience, they tell one person. If they have a bad experience, they tell 10.
Yeah.
You know, so we
that's
just
a great
made
business
sure,
philosophy.
Yeah, we made sure that 999,000 meals were dynamite. And then by word of mouth, we built the brand up.
But you're talking about social media. How has social media impacted your business? Because, I mean, people can go on social media and, you know, they decide that they're having a bad day, so they're just going to rag on your restaurant.
So this social media has made restauranteering very, very difficult. It's basically given the bully a voice that he didn't deserve. You know, so if someone has a bad day, or they don't like you or like your brand, for whatever reason, they'll go onto a Facebook group, none mentioned, and they will hammer you. And suddenly what they could have told maybe 10 people, they're speaking to 50,000 people.
Or what they could have told you. Wouldn't that have been better?
For sure. If they'd had the decency to tell me, you can fix it right then and there. You can make it up to them. You can, if it is warranted, of course.
Yes,
I mean, even if it's not warranted, we will still, as a brand, go that extra 1,000 miles to do whatever we need to do to make you happy, because that's what we do.
And but I'm sure it's also had like very positive effects on the business,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I should have started with the positive. So sorry.
No. I started with the negative.
That was the bad news first, and then lead us
back to the good news.
But the positive is awesome. It really is cool. You do a slight menu change and people know about it instantly. Mm. You know, you do a cool thing like we had Euphonic on our roof on Monday. It was Instagrammed to Helen Garner. It was amazing. Yeah. And that is a very cool aspect of social media.
And also the aesthetics of the restaurant, right? So because the restaurant is so beautiful, everyone wants to be pictured there.
Yeah.
So like you guys have that like, is it like a leaf wall
or
something?
Wall. Yeah, we've got a couple of green walls.
And then everyone wants to be pictured there and of course wants to tag the location.
Yeah,
and because we have FOMO, we all want to be like, I'm going to Rocket's picture.
Even me, I was at Rocket.
Even me, I've got taste. Okay. So I guess social media has been a double-edged sword, right?
It is a double-edged sword. You know, it's yin and yang. Life is a balance, you know. For every up, there's a down.
No, 100.
So there's definitely an upside to social media. If you just need to use it correctly, you need to have a good team behind you. You know, it's become so much more than a Facebook post.
Oh, 100%.
Once a week or twice a week. It's more than that. It's like guerrilla warfare.
We're inundated with information, unfortunately. So you have to... Stay at the top of mind.
I just wanted to say though, I'm so glad that we had you in the studio.
Thanks,
you sound like a really amazing human being.
Mm.
How important was your own father in your journey as a man to where you are right now?
Yeah, everything. Yeah. Mm. It's the best example I could have had as a dad.
Aww.
It was, you know, my father worked away from home for 4 years.
Yeah. What did he do?
He's an engineer.
Okay.
Yeah, he's a civil engineer. So he actually built the Vaal River Tunnel and the Maas Gas Tunnel.
Oh, wow.
He built the Durban Piers.
Mm.
He built the Mshlanga Pier, the Whale Wishbone Pier. But that industry that he was in required him to work away from home. And when we started, when we were young, we didn't have much by any means.
Mm.
And he sacrificed a lot. You know, so when I'm working late and I'm coming home at 3 or 4 in the morning, I think of my father. He was away for 4 years and it suddenly becomes easier to do what I do.
Yeah.
Mm. You know, he gave up everything. So, he's my hero that I...
So it's really important for I suppose, a man who wants to be successful to either find a role model if he doesn't already have one.
Yeah.
That he can model his own life on.
Mm.
For sure, of course. I mean, it makes that inspiration so much easier to attain if you have someone quite close to you. I mean, your dad within your family that you can look up to as a role model. Definitely, you can look up to someone else. You know, an uncle, a good friend, someone who's achieved, but someone who has good values.
Mm.
If you've had a tough upbringing, I don't think a tough upbringing is an excuse to you for you to live a bad life.
Yeah.
But it's definitely, if you've had a good role model somewhere along the line, definitely there's less excuses for you.
Mm.
I just like to know, as I'm a father myself, and you're a father.
Mm.
Maintaining what you have as a businessman and your kids, that time, how do you actually make it work on a practical level? Do you decide that, okay, on certain days, guys, my son or my daughter is having either a ballet recital or a soccer game, I'm not going to be there, and that's just how it is.
You know, you mentioned my dad. My father never missed one game, whether it was water polo, rugby, soccer, cricket, not one.
Wow.
And when he was obviously at home. And I think you need to do that as well. You need to make sure that as you engage with your child, make it as much as you can be. You know what I mean?
Be present.
So be present with them. Go to, like, rock up at school. If you can, if you are fortunate enough to get a bit of time away from work and you don't have...
Do you think it's important to just make that time sometimes?
Make that time,
Because we could, as men, sometimes make excuses.
Of course you can.
Especially when you are successful, because you can be like, you can see, like, it's working, right?
Yeah.
Did you like the bike or the skateboard you got?
Yeah.
And that's why I'm never with you guys. But how important is it to tell your staff, to tell the people that you work with that on that day, not available?
Yeah, look, I mean, I think as for your child... Your time is far more important to them than a material possession.
Yeah.
You know, they're going to look back on their life and they're going to look at their time with you instead of that bike that they rode.
Mm.
You know, and that makes them a beautiful woman or a beautiful man. It's the time that you invest in them.
Mm.
You know, like my issue with going from 2 to 3 kids, it was obviously kids are expensive these days, but my big question was my time with them. Now it's divided. Instead of dividing by 2, it's now divided by 3.
Mm.
The most important thing you can give your child is your time. Your undivided attention. Look at them in their eyes. Hold them. Hug them. Kiss them.
Mm.
You know, you've got to do that. Whether it's done at school when you're watching them play football or cricket or whatever it is, or when it's at home after you've bought them. You know, that touch, that time, that one-on-one.
Oh.
That's nothing's more important than that.
Dope, man.
And how
Dope.
Important is your wife in this equation?
Sure. Everything, yeah. My wife is Spanish.
The best way to get them, I told you.
So go to another country.
No, I'm not telling you that too, because look at me, I'm ported a wife.
No.
How did you guys meet though?
I met her in London.
Oh, okay, all right.
Oh,
I know how important she is, because when she goes home to see her family, I'm lost.
Yeah.
I don't know what to do.
Yeah.
She might be listening now, so she mustn't.
Cool.
Yeah. She must,
I'm way stronger than that. Cool, yeah.
I'm not lost. I'm just a little lost.
Saying it for radio.
Just saying it for radio. No, we know the truth. But is she involved in the business at all?
No, she's okay. Not. She's busy. She's the best home maker I've ever seen. So
yeah,
that's amazing.
She's got a much harder job than me. She raises our three babies.
Aww.
You know.
And how do you make time for that? Because here's the other thing, right?
Yes.
You got to make time. You got the
for
business,
your relationship.
You made the time with the kids. Now you got to make time for the relationship.
Yeah, that's hard. She's the one that suffers the most, because I mean, I try not to miss bath time, and I try to put my kids to bed as much as I can.
Yeah.
And then when they sleep, I go, and then she's at home on her own. Mm. So that's really hard for her. And that's, I mean, the only night I have at home now is a Monday. I get home at 6 or 7.
You're like
Monday.
A pastor, man.
Yeah.
Monday. But
thanks
but
for
what
that.
What do you do? Like, do you take
you
out to a movie?
Special time for each other.
Take out.
Look, whenever you open it, whenever you open a new restaurant, it's tough. So she knows she'll lose me for 6 months.
Okay.
Flat out.
Does she come to the restaurant though, or no?
Look, I mean, sometimes she'll come to the restaurant. I won't even spend time with her.
That's the problem.
We're active. All of us are active. It's hard for us to have our wives there and our spouse and our kids. It's difficult.
Yeah.
And it makes it even more frustrating for us, because they're there.
You feel guilty.
They're there. You can see them, but you can't even sit with them. You're too busy. There's always, you know what, this restauranteering is gunslinging. There's something that's dynamic. There's something going on all the time. You've always got to be on your toes. You've got to be aware. You can't. I could never be that guy that just sits and pretends that there's nothing going on around me, and I sit with my family. So they feel even more, to a certain extent, more separated from me when they're at my work than if I was there at work and they were at home.
Look, I'm concerned that we've got like literally
no, I want
4 minutes.
One
left.
Question.
No, I've got this one. How do you
what's the
tell us the most romantic date night ever?
We're literally fighting for Sean. We're like, you have to come back for part two. But, okay, ask your question, then I'll ask
the
mine.
Most. What would you do, Sean, for the most romantic date night ever? You must have one or two things up your sleeve.
Yeah. Do you know what? And this is gonna sound maybe a little bit boring. When people say to me, "Oh, we're going out to this rave, or we're going clubbing, or we go," I feel nothing. I don't feel any form of FOMO whatsoever.
Yes.
If someone says to me, "I'm going home to crawl under the covers and watch a DVD with my wife,"
pulls at your heart.
And I'm not a jealous person, but I get super jealous. So that for me, the perfect date. It's just better. Maybe because I'm out all the time, and I give myself all the time. And you as a restaurateur, you never stop giving of yourself. So to get home and be a little bit selfish and just be with your wife. That's
you're home. What's next, man?
What's next?
What are you putting together? What the snacks? What's on that tray?
He's asking what you're eating.
Basically, what
because
I'm trying
you've
to
got
do
the
is
best
I'm trying
restaurants.
To get all the details.
Yes, he's trying
and
to
take
copy
them for
you.
Myself.
I'm not going anywhere. You know my number. You can call anywhere.
I've got one last question.
Right, cool.
Yes, we're going to have
guys,
you back,
Sean.
But the last question. Mm. The best piece of advice you've ever received?
Well, I've got three.
Okay.
Three. Mm-hmm. And I tell this to my guys every day. Always try your best.
I love that.
Always try your best. More than that, you can't do. Okay. Mm, mm, mm. So perspiration, inspiration, put those two things together.
Mm.
Try your best. Number two is don't make the same stupid mistake twice.
Mm.
Okay. Because everybody makes a stupid mistake.
Once.
And everybody. Mm-hmm. And I will make a stupid mistake today. But if you don't learn from that, then you are stupid.
Oh, so I love that.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And number three, and most importantly, is don't sulk. Life's too short for sulkers.
Aww.
Yo, I love those, man. Those are great.
Those are lessons we could all live by.
Yeah. And if you have those three, they might sound random, but if you put them together, it pretty much touches on everything.
Mm.
You know what I mean? There's no aggression. There's no passive aggression, resentment. Try your best. Learn from your mistakes. And just live every day to the maximum.
Oh, I love that. Because don't sulk is very much don't have so much self-pity.
Yeah.
Don't feel so sorry for yourself.
Yeah, there are people out there that have it so much harder than you. How dare you sulk?
And isn't that what stops us from our ultimate success and reaching our ultimate purpose? When we feel sorry for ourselves, we are not going to get
there. Then as an individual, you're not progressing.
Yeah. Okay, last song before we go. What would you like to hear? Anything in mind, or should I choose?
Michael Bolton.
Really, are you going there?
No, no, we don't have to.
Did you just put that on air that I like Michael Bolton?
That's our prime.
And Mariah Carey.
Oh my gosh. This is character.
He's a real man.
Annihilation.
Hey, guys, don't feel bad.
Guys, okay, listen.
I also love Michael Bolton.
These are the things we discuss when we're not on air. Let me. So Sean's Confessions. 101.
See if you can pull this one. So and I like it because it's local.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Liquid Deep Fairy Tale. Can you pull it?
Oh, we should have that. I mean,
I haven't heard that in a long time.
Yeah, it has been a minute since Liquid Deep has been played.
And funny,
they don't have fairy tale.
They don't. Okay, wait, I'll get you another one. Also local. Okay, maybe I'll play one for my wife. Jar of Hearts, Christina Perry. You got that one.
Oh, we should have.
How do you spell Christina?
Jar of Hearts. Just put in Jar of Hearts.
I gotta put in the artist.
Christina Perry. It is
C-H-R.
Yeah.
C-H-R-I-S.
People aren't sentimental on the station. We don't have the sad, mushy, loving songs. Do we?
Let's keep it all local. You want another one?
Yeah, why not?
Yeah, just keep giving us songs until we find one, Sean.
Okay,
this stage, you might just have to sing.
I'm just gonna
like, sing us
thing.
Out.
Okay, what about Flyaway, DJ Kent?
DJ Kent
featuring Nandi Mbuma.
We should have that one.
We should have all of these songs. Yet
you guys
we don't.
Are useless.
Yeah, I know. I'm like, we should have asked you for your
too
playlist
much
before.
Talk, not enough music.
Look,
we like the sound of our own voices too much.
All right. On that note,
Sean, this has been terrific. You need to come back for part two.
Sure. Anytime.
I just want to know what you put on the snack tray. That's all. That's what everyone wants to know.
Yes. In part two of Sean Barbo, we will know what he puts on his romantic snack tray. Okay.
Chuckles and Kit Kat.
Both chocolates.
Both.
Those are not very staying in shape friendly. All right.
Well, YOLO.
YOLO. You only live once, people. We're out of here. Till next time.
Bye,
thanks
guys.
So much for
thank you guys. Thanks for having
thanks
me.
Thanks, Sean. Bye. Bye.
This is CliffCentral.com.